You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Friday, March 17th. We're talking Cardinals baseball today with Jennifer Langosch, as always. Jen, we thank you for the time. And, Jen, you have your good days in spring training. You have your bad days in spring training. And, unfortunately, on this Friday, it was not a good day. If your name was Adam Wainwright, as the Cardinals were recently crushed, let's just say, by the Mets, 16-2 was the final, as you informed me. And 10 of the 16 runs were given up by Mr. Wainwright. He'd made some positive strides throughout spring training. We've discussed him kind of rediscovering his curveball, his changeup, but it just seemed like nothing was working today. And again, it's a couple innings. It's spring training. You're going to forget about it in 24 hours, if that long. But what things can you take away from what was clearly a bad, bad day for Adam Wainwright?
Well, it's funny you asked the question that way, because that was my first question to Waino this afternoon was, what do you take away from this? And he looked at me, he smiled, he laughed, and he said, a beating, which of course was the case. He lasted only an inning and two thirds. Disappointing for him in that he had, subsequently his first start had been two innings, then three, then four. He was hoping to stretch out as far as five. It took him 71 pitches to get through an inning and two thirds. And at that point, manager Mike Matheny had obviously seen enough. His biggest issue today, the biggest thing for Wainwright was those fastball command. There were too many pitches left over the middle of the plate, and he was having trouble controlling the movement on that pitch. And that essentially made everything else lack much good. So he threw 15 changeups, he said. He got one swing on him. He wasn't getting the fastball over, and that was setting the Mets up for a very fun day at the plate. It was very odd to see Wainwright, two wild pitches, four walks, again, just labor through this. But he has two more spring starts remaining before the regular season. He'll take this, as he said, he'll go watch the video over the next few days and come back better the next time he takes the mound.
And, Jen, is it almost refreshing that, when you see a guy endure the beating, as he said, that he did today, that, whereas maybe a younger guy can be traumatized by this and think, oh my God, my career is over, I'll never get another out ever again. But Wainwright has been through it all. He's seen the good, the bad, the ups and the downs, and his first reaction to your question is he smiles and laughs. And like I said, can that be reassuring to know that nothing's gonna rattle this guy because he's been through so much already?
Yeah, and as he mentioned, this is what spring training is for. You never want to give up 10 runs, whether the game counts or it doesn't. But these are things that you'd rather obviously work through in March than at any point in the next 6 months. And, Mike Matheny afterwards made the same point you did, in that, Wainwright probably better than anybody else on this team can let a day like this roll off his back. And the reason for that is he's seen in the past that he can have a bad day and his next time out come out and be brilliant. So yeah, there's no reason to be worried about Adam Wainwright. He had had a very good spring to this point. As you mentioned, the curveball, the changeup, all these pitches coming back to him and him feeling really good. And I think it helps too. You wouldn't want to have this probably on your last Grapefruit League start before the regular season, but the fact that he has a couple more starts left to get down here in Florida gives him plenty of time to work out the kinks and to leave Florida on a little bit higher note.
Yeah, like you said, better to have this happen in March as opposed to, October. So it is by far the lesser of two evils, simply a bad day for a good pitcher. It happens. You move on to the next one, and I'm sure it'll be forgotten before very long. Jen, on a more positive note, we got to talk about Yadier Molina. He was absolutely a one-man wrecking crew with his blonde hair for Puerto Rico in the Dominican Republic a few nights ago, against the Dominican Republic a few nights ago in the World Baseball Classic, handing the DR their first loss in the Classic since 2013. Yadi had an RBI single against some guy named Carlos Martinez. Maybe you've heard of him. I'm not sure. Also went deep that game. He threw out a base stealer, made a tag at home. He did everything, and I'm sure that created some buzz in the Cardinals clubhouse to see this guy absolutely, like I said, he was a one-man wrecking crew, and he led Puerto Rico to a huge win.
Yeah, he's been talked about a lot around here, and guys within the clubhouse just loved watching Carlos Martinez and Yadier Molina face off. And it was funny, he dropped that bloop single in against his pitcher, and the two couldn't stop laughing and smiling about it. I mean, they have such a close relationship that they were able to enjoy the moment, even though Yadi got the better of Carlos Martinez. But, it's interesting to me. It reminds me very much of 4 years ago in the last World Baseball Classic when Yadi really helped lead a very, what should have been a mediocre Puerto Rican pitching staff all the way to very late in that tournament. And so much was being said about the job that he does with those pitchers. And we're hearing those same things again. And, you know, I think here, for those of us who see the Cardinals on an everyday basis, we see this from Yadi all the time, that the throws to second, the way he can help pitchers navigate through trouble, his good at bats and his ability to step up when the moment is the biggest. But it's fun to see it on this stage where maybe there's some new eyes watching him, and other people can kind of appreciate how much this guy means to a team. And he really, throughout his career, the bigger the moment, the bigger he is. And that's really, I think, what he's shown over the last couple games in that World Baseball Classic.
Yeah, I mean, he's been outstanding, not just that one game, but throughout the entire duration of the tournament for his native Puerto Rico. And, you know, Jen, I know that when certain guys consider, you know, the pros and cons of playing in the World Baseball Classic, for a veteran of Molina's ilk, a guy that's creeping up now on his mid-30s, you know, some of them might say, well, I've got, you know, a lot of miles on these tires. It'd be better for me to kind of skip this and to focus my energy on my major league club. Molina obviously didn't make that choice. He is playing for Puerto Rico, playing very well. But can you make a case that even for a guy at this stage of his career, having done everything that he has done, that's a play in a showcase like this can actually energize him and to give him a boost heading into the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, you watch him play these games and he has extra pep in his step. I mean, and again, you know, for those of us who have seen him in some big games in October, it kind of reminds me of, you know, the energy you see from Yadi at that time in the season, or even if it's just a big game during the regular season, maybe a Sunday night game against the Cubs or something. He brings it, and he performs his best on the biggest of stages. And I think for Yadi, I mean, this is his fourth World Baseball Classic. He might be able to play one more if the tournament is still around in 4 years. But he takes such pride, and a lot of these guys do take such pride in representing their country, and it would mean a ton to him to be able to help Puerto Rico to a title. And certainly they've gotten off to a good start here in the second round of pool play, that it was never a consideration for him not to go. And it was funny, he was asked by a reporter earlier this week if the Cardinals tried to convince him not to go, and Yadi smiled and said they would never consider that. So the Cardinals were supportive of this. They knew that Yadi wanted to play. And again, it's cool that he is showing on a national stage what we see here every day.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been, like you said, a one-man wrecking crew. He's been so energetic and a lot of, again, as you said, pep in his step. It's been fun to watch, and we're all hoping for a rematch of the 2013 Classic Final between Puerto Rico and the DR. The DR took it 4 years ago. Maybe Puerto Rico gets their revenge this time around, having already defeated the DR in quarterfinal play. So we'll see how that transpires. One guy, Jen, that is back from his stint in the World Baseball Classic and has been now for about, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks, is Son Wano, the Cardinals closer. As he played for his native Korea, they had the early first-round departure, of course. But in your conversation with him and his translator, of course, what were some of his takeaways from his experience out there?
Yeah, well, the current one is the jet lag he's going through, of course. He joked today that he fell asleep last night at 7 in the evening, and he woke up at 3 in the morning and couldn't go back to sleep. So still a little bit of jet lag there to work through. It's one of the reasons why the Cardinals gave him several days off upon returning back to camp before pitching him yesterday. Just like Yadi, you know, Son Wano loved the experience. And for him, it was very special in getting the opportunity to go back and pitch in Korea in front of his, you know, home country fans. This is the first time that he had pitched back there since 2013 when he was playing in the Korean baseball organization. So he performed exceptionally well. He was obviously disappointed that the team didn't perform better, but hoped that the Korean baseball could continue to grow from the experience of having watched the team compete in this tournament. And I think for the Cardinals, to watch O come out yesterday in Grapefruit League play and throw a scoreless inning with ease gave them, you know, a lot of comfort in that he got the necessary work in while he was gone. And this is a guy who, with 2 weeks left in camp, will get everything he needs to done before the start of the regular season.
Yeah, he should hit the ground running once the regular season begins. So a great experience for Korea, albeit short. And the Cardinals not unhappy to have him back in camp and to start the season as their lockdown ninth inning guy. Jen, to wrap up here, it would not be a Cardinals podcast without one or two injury updates, so let's go with those. Matt Carpenter made his return after about 2 weeks on the sidelines, but on the flip side, it seems like the comeback effort of Jordan Schaefer has hit a pretty big roadblock, so give us the good and bad updates on both Carpenter and Schaefer.
Yeah, we'll start with the good. Matt Carpenter took two at-bats in today's game, played four innings in the field. It was the first time since March 1st that he had been cleared to swing in a game. So he felt good. I talked to him afterwards. He said he felt no issues and really said he hasn't felt any issues for about a week now. But again, the fact that this is March, these games don't count. This is spring training. The Cardinals wanted to take it slow before getting him back in two games. So he has 2 weeks now, and really the biggest thing for Matt is getting that timing back just from having missed a couple weeks' worth of at-bats. For Jordan Schaefer, unfortunately, his chances of making the Cardinals club as a two-way player have come to an end. And best case scenario for him is that he'll get the opportunity to try this again next year. The good news is that when he woke up from surgery today, he found out that he didn't undergo Tommy John surgery, but rather had his ligament in the elbow repaired and not replaced. So the big thing there is the time frame of recovery. I mean, Tommy John surgery for pitchers, typically 12 to 18 months. This surgery, which is a fairly new one, but the same one that Seth Maness and Mitch Harris had last year with the Cardinals, comes with a recovery time frame of probably about 7 to 8 months. So, you know, for Jordan, what that means is he'll spend this year, of course, rehabbing, but could potentially sign with another team or return to the Cardinals next year and enter spring training ready to go, giving himself another chance to potentially earn his way onto a major league roster as a pitcher.
Yeah, so some disappointing news for Jordan Schaefer, but as you said, this is the best case scenario given what the options were. No TJ surgery, the recovery time is shorter, and we hope for nothing but the best in Jordan Schaefer's recovery for sure. Great stuff as always from Jennifer Langosch, our Cardinals reporter. We'll do it again at this time next week for sure. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, St. Louis Cardinals. It is Friday, March 17th. We are weeks away from opening day 2017. We're talking Pirates baseball today, as always, with Adam Berry. Adam, thank you very much for joining us. And Adam, want to start on, focusing on some guys that have really stood out the past couple of weeks in spring training. One guy in particular that had a great second half since he was acquired by the Pirates, and that's really continued into spring training, has been Ivan Nova. As you wrote the other day, he was the first Pirate pitcher to go five innings in a spring training start, and five of very impressive innings against a lethal Red Sox offense, no less. Nova goes five innings, five Ks, did not walk a single batter. As you pointed out in the game recap in that article, that as opposed to previous years when he was with the Yankees, when he was not certain of a spot in that rotation, he is now. It's going to be him. It's going to be Gerrit Cole. It's going to be Jameson Taillon from there. A little uncertainty, but he is going to be one of those three guys in that rotation, hands down. So how much do you think that security is contributing to how relaxed and efficient that he looks so far in the spring?
Yeah, I think that's pretty significant. Comfort has been a huge thing for Nova, really from day one in Pittsburgh. You know, he walked in, he immediately felt comfortable in the Pirates clubhouse. He felt good working with Francisco Cervelli, Chris Stewart, pitching coach Ray Searidge, manager Clint Hurdle, just the whole group he felt, naturally comfortable with. So then you pair that with just the stability and knowledge that comes along with knowing, that you have a spot guaranteed, you know the first start you're working toward, you know the results don't necessarily matter, you know, in the sense that it's going to make or break your chances to earn a roster spot. You know, and that's something that he had to deal with throughout his career with the Yankees. So, you know, it just adds a whole nother layer of comfort for Ivan Nova. And, you know, pitching-wise, he's just doing the same stuff that he did kind of down the stretch last season. He's not walking guys, like you mentioned. You know, he's throwing strikes. I think 45 of his 65 pitches, the other night in Fort Myers were for strikes. That's what you want to see out of Nova. That's what allowed him to succeed down the stretch in the second half. And, you know, if they can get that guy back for, you know, a full season, you know, full 3 years ideally, but particularly next season, if he can be their number three starter with that kind of consistency, you know, the rotation looks a little bit better than, you know, it might have. It might, you know, cure some of the doubts and questions that people have about this team right now.
Yeah, I certainly agree because, like we said, those top three spots seem to be locked down right now. But then, you know, from there, I think there's some guys that have kind of pinned down the four and five spots, but not to the certainty that you're talking about the top three with Nova and Cole and Jameson Taillon. So Nova could certainly be a big part of that. And Adam, when you look back at the, earlier this winter when Nova was a free agent and he was, contemplating offers from other teams or at least, considering leaving Pittsburgh despite all the success he had, when he looks back on that now, does he kind of say to himself, boy, what was I thinking? And I know that, money is no object and it's important and you need it, But at the same time, considering how good he's looked now and how good he looked then, is it kind of amusing that, you know, to some degree, he was at least considering leaving a place where he's obviously so comfortable and so successful?
Well, I think it actually validates the stance that he had this offseason, which was that he was going to let the Pirates, you know, kind of do their thing. And if they could make an offer that he deemed acceptable, he wanted to go back. Pittsburgh was always the priority. And basically for the reasons that I talked about earlier, it's about comfort. It's about fit. You know, it's about knowing, you know, where you stand and who you are in the context of that team. That was very important to him, maybe more so than money. So I think it very much backs up the decision that he made. And, you know, granted, we're only talking about spring training right now, but the success that he had in the second half, you know, as well as just the way that he's kind of rolled that in the spring, really does back up that mentality. And it shows that he was in it for the right reasons. You know, maybe he could have taken more money to go elsewhere. We don't know the specifics of that yet, but, you know, comfort was a priority. Pittsburgh was his top option. He said that from the start and maintained that here into spring training. And I think it's really shown why here, you know, these couple weeks of spring training and then certainly the second half last year. Ideally for, you know, the Pirates, it'll roll over for a full season. And like I said, hopefully 3 years.
Yeah, hopefully this will be a match that will pay dividends, not just for Nova, but for the Pirates as well for the next couple years down the road. And like you said, yes, it's spring training, but when you couple what he's doing now with what he did in the second half, that really lends itself to believing that he could really come on strong for a full season in a Pirates uniform here in 2017. Adam, one of the guys you mentioned that comfort level that Nova has with is Francisco Cervelli, and he recently returned. I shouldn't say recently because Italy was bounced about a week or two ago now, but he is back with the Pirates in their camp after participating in the World Baseball Classic for Italy. And, you know, anyone who's following this tournament, and I certainly am, I know you are too, I think for my money, the best game in that tournament was Italy's amazing comeback win against Mexico in Mexico. Italy trailed 9-5 entering the bottom of the ninth. They scored 5 runs without making a single out. The first 7 guys all reached base. A stunning 10-9 comeback win. I don't believe Cervelli was a part of that rally, but to be on that team, to see your teammates do what they did, had to be something special for him. I know that you had a conversation with Francisco about his experience in the World Baseball Classic. Just give me some of the highlights of that discussion between the two of you.
Yeah, he really came back just sort of raving about the entire experience. He did it in 2009, also for Team Italy, and enjoyed it then. I think he even seemed to enjoy it more this time, despite, you know, them getting bounced out of the first round. Part of it was that he got to take his family with him. His father was born in Italy, so he said his dad basically cried every time he saw him put on the Italian jersey. That was pretty sweet of him to say and notice and point out to us. Yeah, he just really had a good time. Italy was not a favored team in that bracket, obviously. He said they were the team that, you know, sort of nobody believed in. So, you know, for them to beat Mexico, for them to contend and get down to that tiebreaker game with Venezuela, which is kind of funny because that's where Cervelli is actually from. He's a native of Venezuela, so, you know, really he couldn't lose either way there. It was pretty neat to see the excitement that he had for the whole thing and just to see him kind of guide a young staff, a young team, and be kind of a veteran. He said it was like a little bit of early homework for the season. You know, he got to work with some younger pitchers and prepare them for a grind and for being counted out. So just an overall positive experience. He said it was like playing in playoff games, so maybe he's a little bit tired, more tired than he would be at this point of spring training otherwise, but he's certainly still got time to, you know, to work on what he needs to work on, to get back on the same page with the Pirates starting pitchers and relievers and, you know, get ready for opening day.
Yeah, certainly, and that's a good point about these games feeling like playoff games because, you know, technically this is an exhibition, but it doesn't have an exhibition feel to it because you see the swelling of national pride with all these teams and all these countries and all these players and the fans especially. It really permeates throughout all these matchups you see in every single bracket, and Italy certainly no different, and I know that Francisco wishes his stay had been a little bit longer with Team Italy. Alas, it was not, but for the time that he was there, I know that it was a very valuable experience for him and for his teammates. And Adam, to stay on the topic of the World Baseball Classic, you know, the Pirates have a lot of guys, you know, having departed from the team to participate for their native countries. In addition to Cervelli, you've got Andrew McCutchen, you've got Josh Harrison, Starling Marte, and Gregory Polanco. And I think that of that bunch, with apologies to the other four, Polanco's been the guy who's really stood out. And not only has he stood out, He stood out for the team that many consider the favorites to win, as they did back in 2013, going 8-0. They do have a blemish on their record in this year's tournament, but still consider it to be the favorites to win the whole thing again. Of course, I'm talking about the Dominican Republic. And Adam, in your opinion, you know, take your average baseball fan who knows the name Gregory Polanco and knows he's a good player. Has his performance, you know, even though it's a very small sample size, has his performance on this world stage really kind of opened some eyes as to just how talented Gregory Polanco really is?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to get a sense of myself if that does happen, because, you know, I saw some people mention that, you know, this could be the sign of a breakout season for Polanco. And I guess it's true. You know, if you're not watching him every day, you look at the overall numbers from last season and you think, all right, well, he got better, but he didn't break out. But, you know, we watched him and we talked about him for really 4 months, certainly three and a half months last year to start the season. And he was that guy. He broke out. He was arguably the Pirates' best hitter for a very long stretch in the first half. He could have been in the All-Star conversation more than he was. You know, we've seen the potential, we've seen the promise, we just haven't seen the consistency. And, you know, right now you're seeing the signs and the flashes of what the Pirates like about him. You know, he's hitting for power, he's hitting for average. They've actually put him in center field for the Dominican in part and mostly because his teammate, Starling Marte, has been out with an ankle injury. But, you know, you're seeing him hold his own there. He's playing left field. He's a really talented, gifted, natural athlete. Who might be, you know, sort of coming into his own on a full-time, kind of permanent basis. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of this season we're talking about, you know, Gregory Polanco is, you know, really being the third star in that outfield. He just needs to stay healthy, avoid some of the little nagging injuries that have kind of set him back, particularly in the last 2 months last year, put together a full, healthy, consistent season. And, you know, this guy really is kind of the limit for him. That's why the Pirates invested in him. That's why they gave him the contract extension at the beginning of last season. They view him as a very important part of their core and, you know, as a potential star player.
Yeah, and maybe this is apples and oranges here, but to draw a parallel between himself and another Pittsburgh athlete who you may have heard of, Sidney Crosby, he had a remarkable performance in the World Cup of Hockey, carried that over into the regular season, and he's the front runner in many people's minds to win the Hart Trophy as the NHL MVP. Not saying that Polanco could reach those heights, but in terms of a guy that is using an exhibition tournament prior to the regular season to get ready and to ground into form, maybe lightning could strike twice in terms of star Pittsburgh athletes, and we'll see what Gregory Polanco does here in 2017. And Adam, to wrap up here, you know, I just rattled off all the names that have, been departed from the Pirates for some time because of the World Baseball Classic. You can make a case that no other team has as much star power missing from their major league team than the Pirates do due to the World Baseball Classic. So with that in mind, what kind of an environment or dynamic has there been created with the players gone and the players getting more playing time because of their absences?
Yeah, it's been interesting because you've seen a decent mix of prospects getting involved. You know, you've seen more Austin Meadows. You saw quite a bit of Barrett Barnes before he was sent back to minor league camp today. But really what you're seeing a lot of is, sort of like utility types moving around. You've seen Adam Frazier go out there in place of, a little bit of outfield. John Jaso has spent more time in right field. You know, guys like, Gifton Gopé might be moving over to third and second a little bit more. Just all the utility types they have in camp. Max Moroff. They have so many of these super utility types. Alan Hansen, guys, Phil Gosselin competing for really one or two, maybe three spots if Jung Ho Kang isn't ready. That they need to see, as Clint Hurdle said, are they capable of being a backup shortstop? Okay, what's their second best position? What's their third best position? Where are their strengths? Where are their weaknesses? So you're seeing a lot of those guys move around really on a daily basis, and it's created kind of an interesting competition and an interesting dynamic because, you know, it's not just guys kind of, holding places and waiting for those other guys to get back. It's a little bit of a test run and an audition for, if something does go wrong in the season and Marte gets hurt. And they move Andrew McCutchen back to center field. Can they put Jaso in right field on a more consistent basis? You know, what can they do with Adam Frazier? If there is going to be that opening and if it's for an extended period of time where Gong is gone, is Phil Gosselin the guy? Is Jose Ozuna the guy? Ozuna's had maybe the best spring of anybody on the Pirates roster. He's hitting the life out of the ball. He's looked really good, but, is that going to carry over to the regular season? Or would you rather have someone like Phil Gosselin, who has a little bit more major league experience and is proven capable of playing, left, third, short, second? Clint Hurdle mentioned him as a potential late inning defensive replacement at first base. What can Alan Hansen show? Can he be consistent? It's an interesting test for somebody like him, where consistency is the issue, that you actually can see him on like a semi-regular basis in spring training, which is not common. So, Clint Hurdle always looks for the positives in any situation. And, sure, the Pirates would have liked to have had their starting outfield here so they could, get them together in this sort of realignment that they've put together with Polanco in left, Marte in center, and McCutchen in right. But it's also created a lot of opportunity. There hasn't really been a ton of wasted at-bats and wasted innings or anything like that.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for Clint Hurdle and the Pirates brass to really assess or reassess, if that may be the case, some guys that ordinarily would not get the playing time they're getting now, thanks to the World Baseball Classic. So we'll see what the Pirates do with those opportunities to see other guys in some new positions, and we'll see how that all shapes itself out once the opening day roster is announced just a couple of weeks from now. Hard to believe. Adam Berry, great stuff as always. We'll let you go. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates. It is Friday, March 17th, and opening day is just weeks away. The countdown is on. We're talking Brewers baseball today with Adam McKelvey as always. Adam, thank you so much for the time, and the thing that caught my eye going through the news feed from the past 4 or 5 days is that, as you wrote about a month ago, back at that time, a lot of roster spots up for grabs, in particular in the rotation, and not a lot has changed, even as we cross the midway point here of March. That goes in particular for the rotation, as you wrote, and I think a lot of people would agree, the only two locks in that rotation right now seem to be Junior Guerra and Zach Davies. As far as 3 through 5, it's wide open. Is that more of a case of, everybody is performing so well that it's making tough decisions for Craig Counsell, or is it a matter of, the opposite, that nobody is really distinguishing themselves right now and nobody's really grabbing that bull by the horns? Which end of the spectrum is it here?
Well, I'm going to go with option C, which is that I'm not sure that this decision is going to be made off spring training performance. Because these are not some unknowns. The 6 and 7 guys really that are going for the spots in the rotation are pretty known commodities. The two guys you mentioned who are in, Craig Counsell has said are in, are the most unknown of them, Junior Guerra and Zach Davies. The others are, Jimmy Nelson, 62 starts over the last couple of years. Willie Peralta, the opening day starter last year. Matt Garza, the long veteran, $12.5 million salary. Chase Anderson, who's on the right side of 30, but has been in the big leagues a little while. And Tommy Malone, another veteran who came in to compete as a lefty. So I don't think that they're going to see anything in spring training games that's going to change a decision. I think they probably know what they want to do in that rotation, and it's just a matter of getting to the end of camp and seeing what the health situation is. How guys are throwing the ball, sure, is part of it. But I'm not sure that the Cactus League ERA is going to dictate what that decision is. So, everybody's healthy. Everybody's getting their work in, getting their pitch counts up. That's kind of where they're at right now. And Craig Counsell made the case that, they're still more than 2 weeks from opening day. There is absolutely no reason to start debating the roster right now because they don't have to set it until April 1st.
And Adam, one of the things that always amuses me every year during spring training is that people make such a big deal and such a fuss about who's starting opening day. Kind of ignoring the fact that there's, oh, by the way, 161 games after the opening day. But, it just amuses me, and I'm sure some other people too. It seems that even though an official announcement has not yet been made, that the club is leaning towards Guerra. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, that's the way they're lined up. And, look, I'm guilty of this. It's a fun sport to try to count the days and figure out what they're doing. And it's a running joke that on the first day of spring training every year, I get to ask the manager who the opening day starter is and, get laughed out of the room. So it's sports, and, it's relevant. They care. The players care. It's an honor, and it's something that they spend some time thinking about. And look, again, the way they've been lined up this spring, it looks like Guerra followed by Zach Davies. And what's interesting is neither of those guys were on the opening day roster last year. It's an example of players getting an opportunity and seizing it and turning it into something. And for Junior Guerra, 3 years ago, he's pitching in Italy. Now he's poised to start opening day in Major League Baseball. It's a pretty amazing story, and it would be cool if he is the guy indeed who gets the honor.
Yeah, that's as we've gone over time and again throughout the months here. That is an incredible story, and what a cap to that story it would be if he is on the mound for the Crew on opening day. One of the guys, as you brought up, that started opening day last year, of course, Willie Peralta. He's trying to be in that battle, in the mix for rotation spots 3 through 5. And Willie just got back from the World Baseball Classic. He was with the Dominican Republic in the first round. The DR swept their way through to get to the quarterfinals of the WBC. I think that there were some mixed feelings on his part because on one hand, you know, you want to be with your major league teammates, but, you know, the DR has been such a powerhouse in the World Baseball Classic. It had to be hard for him to leave the team as they pursue another title to back up the one that they won in 2013. I know you had a discussion with him about that. So give me some of the takeaways from your talk with him.
Oh, yeah. It was very, very tough to leave. And you can understand. They gelled. All those teams, they gel very quickly. Willie Peralta says he's never been in the World Series, but other guys who have said the atmosphere, especially for that Dominican versus USA game in round one, was World Series caliber. The vibe, the buzz in the place, players all went to bed early, Willie Peralta said, which I thought was funny, and they were very, very intent on winning that game. So it was tough to leave. You know, what he had going for him, I guess, is he knew this was the situation all along. He was in that designated pitcher pool where he was only going to pitch in round one. That was the agreement. And he's got to come back to camp here and try to, you know, cement a spot. He was their opening day starter last year, had a really awful first couple of weeks of the season. But to his credit, he went down in the minor leagues. He got straightened out. He got some confidence back. He came back with some really great velocity and good results over 10 starts to finish the season. And, you know, got a really big foot in the door for this season. I think he's probably one of those guys who's in. You know, we're talking about uncertainty on those back end. And, again, I think the Brewers know what they want to do there. There's no unknowns. You know, Willie Peralta, I think, is going to be in that rotation. Jimmy Nelson, I think, is going to be in that rotation. I think Matt Garza is going to be in that rotation. You know, Chase Anderson, they'll have to figure out what they're going to do. That maybe they go with 6, and maybe they do something creative. Kirk Council kind of left open that door. It hasn't been completely ruled out. I don't know. Maybe he starts in the pen. But you know throughout the course of the season that you're going to need more than 5 guys. So, you know, they feel good about kind of the depth that they have. And I think Willie Peralta, if he pitches the way he did at the end of last season, is going to be a part of that depth.
Yeah, it would seem to be that there will be a spot in that rotation for Willie Peralta. And as he mentioned and you referenced, that game against the U.S. at Marlins Park in Miami was something else. The U.S. taking a 5-0 lead, the DR storming all the way back and winning at 7-5. And like Willie said, a World Series-like atmosphere to the point where even some of the U.S. guys who were seasoned veterans and total pros were rattled by the atmosphere in the crowd as they watched their 5-0 lead disappear. That was, for my money, one of the best games of the World Baseball Classic so far. Adam, to shift gears to another veteran on this Brewers team, Ryan Braun, something that we shouldn't spend a ton of time on, but something worth mentioning. He had some comments the other day or recently that didn't go over quite so well. As I think, you know, regarding spring training, I don't think most players, at least most veterans, really enjoy the grind. You know, they just want to get to the real deal, get to the regular season. And I don't think anybody faults Ryan Braun for having those feelings that, you know what, it's tedious, it's boring. And I think 99% of veterans would agree. But I think where he ruffled some feathers was where he brought money into the equation. He said, you know, we don't get paid by the hour. And this is a guy making, you know, around $20 million a year. Just kind of touch on that a little bit. And I think Mr. Braun is kind of regretting those comments right now.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, look, he's said stuff before, and a lot of times it's in jest about spring training. He wishes it was a week long. He's not a guy who needs a lot of at bats. He thinks the bigger thing, and he's right, is being on your spikes for 5 or 6 hours a day, running around, get some reads in the outfield, see some pitches. And the point he makes time and again, he's correct, is that the games are a small part of spring training. These guys, they begin at, you know, 7 a.m. earlier for some, you know, 8 a.m. guys like Scooter Jeanette are out taking infield and outfield as he's moving to utility role. The catchers, we've talked about that breakfast club that they do 8 a.m. They're out there blocking balls in the dirt and doing other fundamentals. You know, these are long grinding days. The pitchers need these games to get their pitch counts up. The hitters do not need a month of spring training games. And Ryan Braun has said that many, many times. This time he said it in a way that some people took issue with. Others said, again, look, he's right. He's got a point. And it's probably both sides are right. He's just not a guy who needs a lot of time in spring training. I don't think he meant anything malicious by it. This guy plays as hard as anybody, cares as much as anybody. When the games matter, these games do not matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed with all that. You know, this is a guy, like you said, that he does not need the reps that maybe some younger guys do. He knows his body. He knows his work ethic and work schedule. And, you know, the tediousness and repetition of spring training, it does wear on you. And I think that a lot of guys, you know, he probably said what a lot of guys think, but may not have the bravery to say it in front of a microphone as Ryan Braun did. It's something that'll blow over like everything else, and the regular season will start. He'll hit home runs, and the whole thing will be forgotten. Of that, I have no doubt. Adam, to come down the home stretch here, you know, we remind ourselves time and again that it's only spring training. It doesn't matter, but 24 runs is 24 freaking runs. And, you know, they beat the Mariners, I believe, the other day, 24-3. And I will say that they Jack Bauer'd the Mariners. I thought of that one last night. Thank you. I'll be here all night. By
very
scoring
nice.
24 runs. He's not on 24 anymore, but for my money, that will always be a Jack Bauer show. Nonetheless, you know, in all your years covering the Brewers or covering baseball, period, you ever see that many runs scored?
Good question. I know I've seen in the 20s, a game at Pittsburgh comes to mind. I think it was getaway day, of course. It was just, you know, it was out there. Their 10-run inning, first of all, they don't have a 10 on the scoreboard at Maryvale. They just put a 1 up there. They had 7 straight hits to start the inning. Just everything was falling in. And I asked the scout the next day, you know, what do you do with a game like that? If you're scouting the Mariners, what do you take from that? And the guy's answer was, you close the book. In other words, it's one of those games, one of those days in spring training. I think even Craig Counsell after the game said, you know what? What do you take from this? It's spring training. That's what you take from it. It doesn't count, doesn't tell you that they're going to be the best offensive team in baseball. But look, there's some good individual performances happening. Luis Brinson, their top prospect, was sent down to the minors this morning as we're talking. You know, it's time for him to get ready for the season, but he was really good in spring training games in terms of driving the ball, in terms of what he did defensively. You know, we're not going to look at his batting average and make big conclusions from it, but he just played really well. He just handled himself really well, and he was one of the guys who went off in that game. Keon Broxton went off in that game. He's had a really, really good spring to build on, a really good finish to last season. So you can take some good individual performances from a game like that, but I'm not certain that we should expect this Brewers team to average 24 runs a game.
Yeah, going out on a limb there, I see. But I think Craig Counsell, you know, put it perfectly that, hey, it's spring training, it's one game, you close the book and move on. But, as you said, you can take away some great individual performances that will hopefully carry over into the regular season. Adam, to wrap up here, along with countless other fans, I have long been an admirer of Brewers broadcaster Brian Anderson, and at this time every year, he takes time away from his baseball duties to cover March Madness. That's that thing that people pretend that they're not watching at work, but they really are. And it's no different
yeah.
here at MLB.com, I'll tell you
not
that.
Not you.
I'm calling everybody out. But Brian has been such a fine example of a multi-talented broadcaster for many sports for so many years. I know that you had a discussion with him as he departed for his March Madness duties, and just kind of give me some of the highlights of that conversation. And does he find it challenging to go from the pace of baseball to something as frenetic as college hoops?
No, to the contrary, he likes it because it's a challenge for a broadcaster. As you said, you know, the pace of the game is completely different. It's a totally different animal. And it was interesting that he, you know, that's one of the things he enjoys about it is the challenge of switching. He's done some NFL work as well, which is another completely different thing. The other thing that stood out to me from the conversation is he doesn't know the matchup. Just like we don't know the matchups. He gets an email a couple of minutes before Greg Gumbel makes the announcement on CBS. So he's waiting, just like everybody else, to see what the matchups are. And for him, that launches him into this furious couple of days of prepping for these teams. It's 12 teams that he sees in the span of about 6 days. Hmm. And he's got to become expert on all those because you know the fans of those teams are going to be watching and picking apart everything he says. So it's a tremendous amount of homework and work that goes into this while at the same time he's traveling to the different venues. So it's you got to respect the amount of effort that goes into it. And he is a very, very good broadcaster. The Brewers are lucky to have him. They signed him to a multi-year deal. You know, he's going to be here for a while. And the Brewers, the cool thing is that the Brewers, you know, let him go a little bit, for stuff like this because he really likes to do it. It raises his profile. It's probably good for the Brewers as well, and everybody kind of benefits from it. So he'll be gone. He'll be back opening day to call opening day, switching back to baseball. And then as the season goes on, he'll also have some national games for TBS baseball games. And then he'll do some postseason games. And then, like I said, he'll get into football once the baseball offseason comes. So there is no offseason for Brian Anderson.
Yeah, I'm in awe of how effortless he makes it look when, as you illustrated, there was tremendous amount of efforts put into it to make it seem effortless. And there was nobody, for my money, better in the business than Brian Anderson. And I echo your sentiments that the Brewers and their fans, very, very lucky to have this guy. And we're lucky to have him throughout the duration of March Madness as well. Adam, that's going to put a bow tie on this one. I dare say you've earned yourself an adult beverage or two. for various reasons, and we will get into it again next week at the same time. In the meantime, Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers. We're talking Reds baseball today with Mark Sheldon on this Friday, March 17th. Mark, we thank you for the time. And Mark, the Reds are cutting a lot of players from the Major League spring training roster just recently, 16 players, in fact, but despite sending those 16 guys away from big league camp, there are still a lot of roster spots up for grabs, perhaps a few more than was to be expected here as we cross the midway point of the month of March, opening day just a few weeks away. And, Mark, by your estimations, it seems to be three rotation spots, two spots in the bullpen, and some bench spots, which have yet to be really solidified on this the would-be opening day roster weeks from now. Now, health is obviously a big factor in this entire equation. So let's kind of break this thing down, beginning with the rotation. Tell us who's in, who are locks to be in that rotation right now, and about the guys competing for the spots up for grabs.
Sure. The only two locks begin with the letter F, Scott Feldman and Brandon Finnegan. Either one of those guys, incidentally, will be the opening day starter. I just asked Brian Price who his starter would be, and he said he didn't know yet, but it will be one of those two guys. So they're locked in. And then the other three spots, one of those became a vacancy because of Anthony DeSclafani's ulnar collateral ligament sprain, and he's going to start the year in the DL. So now three spots among a lot of people still: Amir Garrett, Tim Adelman, Bronson Arroyo, Cody Reed, Robert Stevenson, and I think I may have missed somebody, but that's pretty much the group. Oh, sorry, Sal Romano as well. So those guys are in the battle. Rookie Davis as well. I keep forgetting names. So they're all in the hunt. I would say Garrett, Romano, and Davis have had the best springs of the group, but I think ultimately Davis and Romano are kind of in that second tier still because they only have a limited AAA time or no AAA time, and some of the other guys have more experience. I picked in my prediction that Garrett, Reed, and Arroyo would get those last three spots. Arroyo is kind of a reach. He's an X factor. He only has two innings so far, but I think if he shows he's healthy and can get batters out, he'll get every benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, it would seem that he does have a chance to crack that rotation. And like you said, it's going to come down between Finnegan and Feldman. Of course, Feldman, an offseason acquisition. And I got to think that if we're playing a guessing game here, it's got to be Brandon Finnegan. I mean, I would you know, hesitate to think that the Reds would give an opening day start to a guy who was new to the team over a guy who did perform pretty well last year. Is that kind of your way of thinking, too?
Kind of my thinking. The only deviation from that is that Feldman is a veteran. He's been in the league for 12 years. Starting opening day won't get him particularly too charged up, even though it is his first start for the Reds. On the other hand, Brandon Finnegan, as Brian Price pointed out, is a veteran. Even though he's only 23 or 24, he's a veteran of the World Series for the Royals. He's pitched in a big game against Clayton Kershaw, and went, even though he lost 1-0, went the distance in Chavez Ravine. So he's not afraid of the moments either. So I would think Finnegan would just get it based on last season and the fact that he's been here and, you know, might be an excitement for the fans. But you just never know where it falls in, and they can still mess with the time off and make sure that the right guy starts on his normal day's rest when they get to April 3rd.
Yeah, interesting decision coming up for Brian Price and the Reds to see who will be on the mound for the Reds on opening day. And, of course, Mark, you pointed out, a big X factor in this entire equation is health, as, Homer Bailey is on the mend. Anthony DeSclafani is also on the mend. So at some point you would think, the most optimal scenario here is that one or both of those guys is going to make their way into that rotation mix. What kind of a trickle-down effect could that have in terms of the bullpen? Could we see a guy potentially, let's say that a guy makes the opening day rotation, is one of the starting five, but then when the other veterans come back, maybe they get bumped into a bullpen role? How do you see that whole thing shaking out, assuming everybody does get on the same page in terms of being fully healthy?
You know, honestly, it's going to come down to performance and who's pitching the best and who needs to come out, especially when you have the three spots that are among younger guys. I can't imagine that all three, although they would love it, that all three go out of the gate and just destroy everybody and have, you know, splendid first months of the season. But I would imagine what they're going to end up doing is they'll have at least two of the starters that are competing, maybe one of the starters that are competing right now for a rotation spot, go in the bullpen. They need some length. They can't really assume that any of the five guys they pick will be consistent 200-inning, 30-start kind of guys, just because it's just they don't have the track record. And in Arroyo's case, he's coming off 2 years of not pitching, even though he used to have the track record. I would say that they'll see who's when it all comes in, when they have all their projected original five starting pitchers in the rotation, whoever's pitching the best of the current group might go to the bullpen. But Amir Garrett, I don't think they see him as a reliever type, even in the short term, that I would not imagine he would be a bullpen guy. He would definitely be a Triple-A or big league rotation guy.
Yeah, so I think the moral of the story is, you know, the configuration of the rotation and the bullpen on opening day is going to look considerably different come game 162, considering all the moving parts and X factors within this pitching staff in terms of performance and especially in terms of health. Mark, let's transition right now to the bench. It's a very interesting mix of guys between youngsters and veterans. Some non-roster invitees seem to be in this mix. So when you look at the overall group here, anything that stands out to you?
Well, I think the two guys that they signed right before camp or during camp as non-roster players that are veterans aren't hitting particularly well in Ryan Rayburn and Desmond Jennings, but I still think they make the team. It's just because of their track records, and they. I know Brian has wanted a veteran presence on his bench. I think Hernani Urubarán, as a left-handed hitter and a guy that can play multiple positions, I think he has a really good chance of making it, just because even though he hasn't played a lot of major league games, he is 32 years old and has some experience, and he's also hit really well here in camp and in September of last year. Tony Renda could be a possible candidate. He's having a marvelous spring, both offensively and defensively. He's kind of a grinder. They really like what they've seen from him. Arismendi Alcantara has had he had some struggles at shortstop right at the beginning and airmailed some throws. He's gotten much better defensively. He can also play different positions, so they have some choices. And of course, Tucker Barnhart will be the backup catcher if Mesoraco is ready. So I would imagine they have five bench spots. The only thing that could really change is if they decide they really need extra bullpen depth and they have an eighth bullpen guy. That would make a four-man bench, and that could really leave somebody out in the cold for a job.
And we'll see how that whole thing shakes out between that eighth or potential eighth spot in the bullpen, and if that goes away, what that does to the configuration of the bench. And Mark, to begin to wrap up here, none other than everybody's favorite Sean Casey is going to be the grand marshal for the annual opening day parade in the Queen City. And Mark, in all your years covering baseball, all the players you've interviewed and talked to and sat down with, is there any player more beloved and more outgoing than the man that they affectionately call the mayor?
Yeah, he's one of the more popular guys. It's funny is that my very, very first day on the Red Beat in December of 2005, on that very first day, Sean Casey was traded to the Pirates. And I was so disappointed because I had only heard from my predecessor, Anthony Castrovince, that you may not know anybody in this clubhouse, but you will always have Sean Casey. He'll be a go-to guy just because he's so friendly. He will not make you feel like a newbie. And, of course, he gets traded for Dave Williams the first day. The Reds would come to not like that trade very much. But I've met Sean over the years just as a visiting player and as he's returned to Cincinnati as an instructor or the Reds Hall of Fame and whatnot. And he's always been an incredibly nice guy. He always grabs you and gives you a slap on the back and a big hug. And he's just a very outgoing, personable guy, and he earned the nickname the mayor for a reason, and that's what it is. He just gets along with everyone. He's a super approachable person. He treats everyone the same, whether you're a major league player, a fan, or a media person, or, you know, a staff member. All the clubhouse workers have always loved him, and you can see why. So A very good pick is for the Finley Market opening day parade. I'm sure he will enjoy it immensely, and the fans will enjoy seeing him.
Yeah, I think we can all agree there could not have been a more perfect choice for the title of Grand Marshal for opening day in Cincinnati, just weeks away. The mayor, Sean Casey. Mark Sheldon, great stuff as always. We'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, it's Matt Waymire signing off for MLB.com Extras Cincinnati Reds. It is Friday, March 17th, and we're talking Cubs baseball today with our Cubs reporter, Carrie Muscat. Carrie, we thank you for the time, and as you wrote earlier on this Friday, the Cubs began trimming players from their big league camp. One of the seven guys they sent down was the Cubs' number one prospect, according to MLBPipeline.com, a name that Cubs fans should be quite familiar with. That is Eloy Jimenez. He's only 20 years young. And he had a pretty darn good spring, Carey. 321 average in 16 games. He drilled a pair of home runs and doubles. And it seems that Joe Maddon was not restrictive in his praise for the very young outfielder. Just talk about some of the remarks that Joe made about a guy that we could see in Chicago in the not-too-distant future.
I'll try and temper some of the fans' enthusiasm. He's only 20 years old, so it's going to be a few more years before we see him at Wrigley Field. And he does have some things to work on in terms of his defense and in terms of base running and things like that. But what he has been impressive with is just how he's made adjustments at the plate. And considering his young age, that's what Maddon has really been dazzled by. You know, Joe was saying that Eloy will see a pitch, look terrible on it, and then boom, the next pitch he's able to make great contact and get a hit. And that shows a lot of maturity for a guy, again, who's only 20 and hasn't had that much experience. So I think they have really high hopes for him. This was his first big league camp, so he took advantage of that. I think what a lot of the coaching staff may be even more proud of Jimenez is that yesterday, which was today's Friday, Thursday, he was one of 12 minor leaguers who graduated from English class. And so it's something that the minor leagues do, and they have the players that are graduates dress up in blue caps and gowns, and they do a little presentation in front of the other minor leaguers in English. And it's really a fun ceremony, and he deserved a lot of credit for that, too.
Yeah, no question. There's some great pictures on Cubs.com of the guys, like you said, in the blue caps and gowns, and a very important development in terms of any minor leaguer who is not from the United States to take that big step, and a great graduation ceremony, if you will, that the Cubs held the other day. And, Carrie, when you look back at some of the established stars now with this Cubs team, when they were coming up through the system, did they receive the same kind of praise and assessments from Joe Maddon or from Cubs brass, when they were coming up as Joe was heaping on Eloy? Is he, what level is he at in terms of maybe one day ascending to the heights of, a Baez or a Bryant or a Rizzo or somebody of that ilk?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about whether or not Joe praised Bryant and Baez, yes, he did. There's been a lot of kids in the system that haven't quite had success, and it's hard not to praise Bryant and Baez and Rizzo and some of those guys, Addison Russell as well, even though he wasn't that long in the system. What was interesting was that the seven players that were trimmed on Friday, Joe said that every one of them will make one of them. Felix Pena has already pitched in the big leagues briefly in relief. But Joe was saying that every one of them will eventually get to the big leagues, that they all have that kind of talent. And I think that's what he's impressed with in the system, is that the organization is that deep.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great sign for the Cubs, because you see so many teams, they kind of, bottom out their farm system to acquire big league talent. The Cubs have not had to go that route. They've brought up guys through the system. They're now established big league stars, and they've simply restocked and replenished their farm system, which is why that they're the envy of the other 29 teams in baseball for that reason, and a lot of reason to think that as good as the present is, the future looks just as good, if not better. And, Kerry, to transition to a guy, from Eloy, who's only 20, to Eddie Butler, who's not that far removed from 20 years old, but He's been in the big leagues a couple years now, a guy that the Cubs took a flyer on earlier in the offseason after years of struggling with the Rockies. He never met the expectations that were desired of him as a high draft pick. But this spring, and again, yes, it's spring training. You get to take everything with a grain of salt, but the numbers are pretty good. You know, four appearances, he's 4-0, a 2.70 ERA, 10 innings on the mound. He's only given up four hits. How many eyebrows is he kind of raising right now, and what do you see in terms of his immediate future with the Cubs?
Well, they acquired him as insurance in case something would have were to happen to one of the starters. You know, if Lester or Lackey or Arrieta had an injury, they're trying to acquire some pitching depth, and Butler fits that role. Even though he may lead the Cactus League in wins, I think we're going to throw that out because a lot of those wins, as most people know, happen. But I think what he was happiest with his last outing, he went four innings against the Dodgers and held them to one hit. And the Dodgers are a team that he has faced before, having pitched for the Rockies and having pitched in the NL West. So it's a team that he knows. Justin Turner has owned him. I think he had like a 600-something average against him in the regular season. So he was happy to retire him. He was happy to take care of Adrian Gonzalez, you know, in his at-bats. So it was a good sign for him. And what was nice is he said he feels like he's been more consistent in terms of what he's doing pitching-wise. So I don't know if Cubs pitching coach Chris Bosio has found a secret word or something to make it click, but they're seeing good results so far.
Yeah, and, who wouldn't be opposed to, Jake Arrieta, the sequel, in terms of a guy that you bring over after struggling with his previous team? And like you said, something clicks. It's a word, it's a term, it's some mechanical tweak, you never know. Maybe all the above, and maybe he could be another success story a la Jake Arrieta. Long way to go, but, time will tell. But right now, the signs are all positive for Eddie Butler in his first tour of duty with the Cubs here in spring training. And Kerry, to transition from that to the outfield, Kyle Schwarber continues to get his work in during spring training as an outfielder. Now, he's always put on a show in the batter's box. That can't be denied. But there's a lot of attention right now on what he's doing defensively in the outfield, especially after last year's season-ending collision with former Cub, now Dexter Fowler. So kind of talk about, what you wrote about the feeling out process that's going on right now between Schwarber and the center field duo taking over for Dexter Fowler, the combination of Albert Almora Jr. and John Jay, and how the three of them are kind of, working to overcome their lack of experience in terms of playing with one another on a defensive basis.
Pretty basic baseball. They're just trying to make sure that they communicate with each other. Jay and Almora need to know what type of range Schwarber has, how much ground they need to cover. As Kyle told me, he's a big body, and you have to make sure that you get out of his way. So they also need to recognize that. I think that was the problem with Fowler and Schwarber, and the reason they had the collision is that they really didn't, neither of them knew who was going to get the ball, and they just crashed, and we all know what happened after that. What was interesting is it was on Friday, Schwarber actually started in right field for the Cubs against the White Sox, and part of that was because they wanted to have him just sort of get used to seeing the ball coming off the bat in that direction. There may be some games during the season that fans see Schwarber in right, say, for example, when they're playing the Pirates at PNC Park. Right field's a little smaller. They could have him there, put Hayward in center, and then have Jay or Elmore or somebody else in left. So they were sort of testing that a little bit on Friday. And Hayward, of course, he can play right, but he can also play center, and they wanted to give him a little exposure there so it's not just totally foreign. So Friday was a little bit of an experiment, and I think they all survived.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Interesting concept to let the ballpark kind of dictate the outfield configuration. More outside-the-box thinking from Joe Maddon, which we're certainly used to at this point. And, Kerry, in terms of Kyle's overall mobility, obviously he had the major reconstructive surgery. Does he look as mobile and fluid now as he did, before the injury, or is that still kind of a work in progress in your eyes?
No, he looks fine, and you'd never know that he was wearing a brace. They've found a brace that's comfortable and lightweight, and you you really would never know that he's got it on. So that's been an encouraging sign.
Yeah, no question there. And hopefully all the best for Kyle Schwarber. And let's have one fewer outfield collision this year than we had last year and keep him healthy for all 162. And, Carey, to begin to wrap up here, one of the highlights of the World Baseball Classic for anybody that's paying attention was the incredible no-look tag, if you will, of Javier Baez the other night on a would-be base stealer. He was already celebrating as he was swiping down the tag. It was quite a sight to behold. That took place in Puerto Rico's victory over the DR a couple of nights ago. So my question, I guess, would be how many guys in the clubhouse were, you know, talking about it and trying to emulate, you know, Javi's no-look tag, because this guy has made an art form of just applying tags. It's something you would never think that you could apply an art form to, but Javier Baez has somehow managed to do just that.
It was just Javi being Javi, and I think I don't think anybody here is trying to emulate him at all. It's just Javi is unique and one of a kind and is able to get away with that kind of flash. He's just able to get away with it because of he's been able to make the plays. Again, the Cubs, I'm sure, you know, their focus is always let's make sure we make the routine plays and get that done too. But this was it was pretty impressive, and I know that part of the motivation, I'm sure, from that is that Yadi Molina made the throw to Javi at second, and from what we've heard, the Puerto Rico team is very motivated to win this for Yadi. So I'm sure that might have had something to do with it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that same game, Molina was a one-man wrecking crew, something I discussed with Jen Langosh, our Cardinals reporter. And I know it's something they want very badly for the veteran, Yadier Molina. And maybe this is the year that they overtake the DR and get revenge as the DR beat them back in 2013 in the World Baseball Classic Final. We'll see what the next week to 2 weeks brings in terms of that. Carey Muscat, great stuff as always. We'll let you go. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Chicago Cubs.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.